Welcome to Paper Money, the podcast covering the business side of the game industry. I'm Ben Clark.
And I'm Rhett Kipp.
Today is July 8th, 2012.
Woohoo! And we've survived the heat waves.
Oh my! Who knew that 87 degrees would feel fall-like?
Yeah, I mean, it's ridiculous. It was like 90 today at one point, and it still felt cool because, you know, the other day at 106 when my brain was baking away.
Yeah, I think we hit 107 or 108 on Friday, and it was just, it was insane. You know, this is, I'm in West Michigan. This is... This is not temperatures we normally get. If we were in, say, the Texas Panhandle, it would be a little different story.
No kidding. I mean, it was crazy here. They were canceling 4th of July events because of the risk of fire because everything's so dry.
Yes,
well, it's so hot.
That they had a unique solution to that problem in San Diego, where they just launched all of their fireworks in 15 seconds.
I've seen that happen, not quite to the same extent. To San Diego's, but I've seen that happen before.
Oh, that's okay. Well, here in town, they in the little town I live in, they just set the fireworks barge on fire.
So, awesome.
Yes.
Awesome. I like that idea. Yeah, yes. Mine. Everything went well here. I don't understand. It's such a rarity.
Well, it's Chicago. They probably bribed the right people.
Well, you know, but there's a number of them, so it was my local. Anyway.
Yeah.
Yes. We digress.
We are digressing. And the reason
happy past 4th of July, folks. Welcome to the late part of summer.
That's midsummer. Right. Welcome to midsummer. And it's really the midsummer doldrums, which is why we're talking about anything but games. There's just not a lot of news going on this week because it's all timed for Gen Con coming out. There's some stuff coming out late this month in anticipation of Gen Con, and we're going to talk about that in our first news story. But really, There's just not a lot going on. The third quarter stuff and the fourth quarter stuff from the big boys isn't coming until after Labor Day. And, you know, the hobby market stuff, everybody's holding on to it for basically the first or second week of August at this point.
Yep.
So without further ado, we plunge into the shallow depths of the news this week.
Watch your head.
That's right. Well, hey, you know, any port in this humid, fetid storm, so we'll bathe in the kiddie pool that is this week's news.
That's right.
All right. First up, Dungeon Command from WotC is coming out July 24th. I don't know if anybody's seen any of the write-ups on this. This is a diceless miniatures game with cards, right? All the action is cards. There's no dice. And some people have said, oh, it's got a Magic the Gathering flavor. And some people, Rhett, have said, no, there's no chance. How is this going to play out? And it should be interesting. I think a lot of the miniatures are very much the same as the D&D minis. I understand that there are some carryovers / crossovers. The scale of the maps is the same, so you can use stuff out of Castle Ravenloft or the Drizzt board games. Right. And I think the scale of the monster cards are the same, too, is my understanding.
Yeah, they pretty much went with their universal sizing so that it looked and felt like a lot of their other products.
Correct. But if the monster cards are the same, that implies to me that there are chunks of the system that are the same.
One expects that there's some aspect to that. We'll wait and see. Apparently, it's two sets, and each of the sets is split so that you could actually play a game against half of a set.
Correct. Yeah, there's each person buys one faction box, and I think there's a quick start rules for so you can split a faction and play against each other, see if you like it, and then your buddy can go buy the other faction box. I think it's interesting. I mean, let's take this back. Wizards has been trying to find ways to introduce cards into more of their line since Everway.
Yes.
I think this is a good thing. But really, we're not going to know whether or not this is a great product or not until everybody comes back from Gen Con raving or not raving about the product.
Well, I mean, it comes out on the 24th of July, so we'll know before that. People have had it for almost a month by the time we get to Gen Con.
I don't know. All right, I'm going to take a wait and see. I'm going to play it at Gen Con, and if I'm raving about it, then it's a great game.
There we go.
I'm the judge. I'm the arbiter of taste as to what's cool and what's not. Anyways, Dungeon Command coming out July 24th. Just announced some reviews popping up on the web. Looks interesting. Like I said, it's diceless. It's all card-based action. should be an interesting play. That said, other news out of WotC, they are, and again, you guys probably have heard all of this because I think this came out about the day that we were recording the last podcast. WotC,
as usual.
Sorry, folks. The real life has intervened once again. WotC is reprinting the 3.5 edition rule books for D&D. And a lot of people take this as a shot across the bow on Peizo, in that basically they're coming, they are going to try and get their core market back.
Yeah.
I don't
blame them.
Oh, who, I don't know if anyone can blame them. I don't know if it's going to work, but I do think that reprinting the 3.5 edition rule books is certainly a hugely positive step.
Yes. There's a number of people that I've heard already that are, you know, scrambling and saying, oh, finally I can get my books and I don't have to pay, you know, $100 a book type of thing.
Exactly. I think this will be a crucial first test to see if WotC can get back in the game that they accidentally seeded when fourth edition came out and the market kind of moved away from them. So very interesting move on their part. And again, well, the success of this one is not going to be determined on day one of the release.
No.
This is something that I think the success of this is determined when fifth edition comes out next year.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I think that's what this is. This is getting people to stop defecting and to move up to fifth edition when it comes out next year.
I think you've hit the nail right on the head. Save whatever they can of their market. Don't worry about fourth, because the fourth players are different players than the appeal to the new edition, theoretically.
Exactly. So again, another interesting taking that. We had speculated when they announced that they were going to be redoing fourth edition, and they announced the open play test this spring. You and I both said, are they going to seed the market? Are they going to let Peizo have their corner and then, you know, try and build up, you know, and shore up what, you know, the segment that they still have? And it's a sizable segment, and no one could blame them if they decided this. But I think with the reprinting of the 3.5 edition rule books, they're saying, we're going to try and get market share back. We're not just trying to stabilize. We're going to try and recapture what we had before.
Absolutely. I think this is a real aggressive stance by Wizards to, you know, to go back after what is their market. I mean, you know, even Paizo refers to theirs as, you know, 3.75. Yeah. You know, they're really pretty much saying, yeah, this is the game. And, you know, WotC is the owner of the game. So therefore, they're just saying, fine, come back to us then.
Exactly. So interesting to see how that turns out. Again, I don't think the success or failure of that this move will be determined at Gen Con or anywhere else. I think this is going to be determined when people get excited about 5th edition coming out. So
exactly.
All right, moving on. Oh, go ahead.
I say onwards.
Oh, onwards, yes. We're both saying
to
the
all
thing.
The rest of this news before we run out of time.
I got to tell you, the quality of the news drops straight off a cliff after that story.
Oh, yeah.
That's okay. We're going to talk about Kickstarter in a minute, folks. So hang in there. The first politics board game of the season, I spotted this on Newswire. It's called The Presidential. And no company was really listed that I recognize. So I'm assuming this is a single game company. And it was datelined Henderson, Nevada. It's called The Presidential, but again, these things come out of the woodwork in a presidential election year, and now is about the time to release them, because as of, say, the second Wednesday in November, no one wants them.
So, it may be even earlier this election season.
Yeah. The other reason I know it's a single game company is the press release mentions it was manufactured in the USA with dice made in China. So
there we go. Yeah. It sounds like the perfect product for this year.
You know, exactly. It's suffice to say, first politics board game of the year up and about, the first new politics board game up and about.
Yes.
And somewhere over at Mayfair, someone is thanking God that this election they don't have to try and move Roe to the White House. Okay.
Yeah,
that's such an evergreen joke, and it's been good for 20 years, and now they finally moved the last of Roe to the White House, and I'm going to have to quit telling it.
So we'll just have to explain it now. You can still tell
right.
us.
Folks. Yeah, folks, if you know of a game company that has a real dog that's been in their warehouse for a long time that they can only sell every 4 years, let us know, and we'll start making jokes about that game.
There we go.
All right. That said, Astra wrapped up last week. Astra is the like the American Society of Toy and Retailer Association. It's the American Specialty Toy and Retailer Association. They had their big confab on the East Coast this year, and we completely failed to mention it, which was an oversight on our part. Dave Miller from the Purple Pawn went over and did a nice write-up on it on the Purple Pawn. Thanks, Dave, for going. We completely missed it. It fell off our radar this year. Astra is a great show to go to. Okay, one, if your travel time isn't too strenuous, and two, if you're the kind of retailer who sells a lot of specialty toys in addition to board games and card games. Well, and role-playing, right? But if you're the kind of hobby store that does toys, I think this is a great show. I don't know that it's a great show to go to as, like, Games Plus, for instance, which is strictly hobby.
No, I can't see them having a reason to go to something like this. But as you mentioned, if you're a toy-oriented store who dabbles in the other areas, or vice versa, yeah. This is a show for you.
Yeah, and especially, like you said, especially if you're in the eastern half of the country, Astra is a decent show. They move around from year to year. This year is in the eastern half of the country. I think they'll do one in the Midwest, and then they'll move out west. Don't have the schedule. It used to be one that we featured heavily on the show. We'd say, hey, you need to go check out Astra. And realistically, nothing's come out of Astra on the game side. If you're a mid-sized game company and you're maybe do educational market or children's stuff, it's a great show to go to. But for the hobby industry, it's a pass. Yeah. Everybody's gearing up for everyone just recovered from Origins and is gearing up for Gen Con. So again, Astra wrapped up. If you're interested, go over to the Purple Pawn, check out Dave's story. And Dave, we're glad you have power again, so now you can keep posting. the man didn't have power for 6 days, after the big storm went through.
Yeah, a lot of people there.
Yeah, exactly. There's a lot of stuff I can do without from the 21st century. American Idol among them, but air conditioning is not. I like my air conditioning. All right, that said, let's move on. Gen Con pre-reg has closed. If you're thinking about going to the show, folks, you're going to have to buy your badge at the show. If you're going to do that, really show up Wednesday before 2:30 in the afternoon, it's exactly. If you haven't gone yet, if you're thinking, I might go and I might pitch my game to somebody, or I might just go to check out Gen Con, and you haven't done your pre-reg yet, one, you're not going to get a hotel within 20 miles of the show, and two, you're going to stand in a long line to get your badge. And I think, have we covered that? Are we done? Is that really?
I think that's pretty, hotels are gone. You're now going to be staying somewhere where you're going to need to commute back and forth to your hotel and the show.
Yes. Stay near the airport and you can take the airport shuttle. I think that's
yeah. There's a number of nice places.
Yeah. Yeah.
Affordable. But again, you'll have to commute.
Yeah. Indy's not a big town. But again, pre-reg is closed. And I made a terrible mistake. I forgot to, I'm like the king of generic tickets. And I forgot to order them online this year. Oops. So my badges are going to be mailed to me, but I'm going to have to stand in line for generic tickets on Wednesday afternoon.
It'll be fun. You'll enjoy that experience. Well, you can tell us all about it afterwards.
I,
on the other hand, will not be doing that.
Are you going to be putting up the booth?
On Wednesday, yes, I will be assembling the booth, or actually stocking. The booth should be assembled by then. I should be stocking the booth by that point. For those who've never seen the booth, it does take most of a day to get our inventory checked in and stocked and prepped and everything else.
Are you guys bringing Eddie back? Was Eddie repaired?
No.
Okay. For those of you who don't know, Catalyst has the world's largest fiberglass Robotech. No, I said Robotech. Oops.
Oh, you wound me. No, Fred is an elemental.
Oh, I thought he was Eddie after the Iron Maiden guy.
No. Fred's an elemental.
Oh, Fred is an elemental? Okay. Suffice to say, he was damaged in shipping at one of the later shows last year, and apparently not repaired for this one. So.
No, he suffered greatly being split in about five places.
Oh, wow. So yeah, I've had nights like that.
I hope you don't have any as bad as this.
Suffice to say,
of his arms were missing. That's not a good way to wake up.
No, exactly. So at least he didn't wake up in a bathtub full of ice with his kidney missing.
There we have it. Yeah. And started the phrase by, "Oh no, not again."
Yeah. Well, anyways, so Gen Con, like you said, and one of the reasons we mentioned Gen Con pre-reg closing is the news is gonna come fast and heavy, basically starting sometime. My guess is first week of August, we'll start seeing more press releases come out that the product is hitting stores, and then basically at Gen Con we'll be seeing news. Neither of us, I think, is predicting a major Gen Con announcement, although we might see some Fantasy Flight Star Wars stuff.
Well, I think we'll see the Fantasy Flight Star Wars stuff, and I think we'll get a major announcement from Wizards about the new edition of D&D.
I think they're going to set
a date for people at that point.
Oh, really? Interesting.
Yeah, I do. I anticipate that we'll hear Gen Con announcements saying they've already said that they're going to have a major announcement. They don't have a whole lot of other eggs in their basket at the moment that I think that would be a Gen Con big announcement.
Maybe it's Pokemon.
It's what?
It's the Pokemon RPG.
Pokemon RPG. If they convince them to give that license back, they might just go for that.
It's going to be. But it still produces
product every time, and there's always a new video game out
there.
It'll
be based on the Everway
system. Season or so.
Yeah, based on the Everway system.
I think it's 12 years into the television series, you know, and they just keep cranking those things out.
I'm telling you, it's a money machine. That said, speaking of money machines, let's talk about Kickstarter. Rhett, you've been wanting to talk about this for a while, and I've been rambling on about boxes. So, Rhett, I am going to let you take the lead, and I want you to talk about Kickstarter.
Well, let's first explain what it is. It is a way to raise funds for all sorts of projects, and I mean worldwide projects. I've seen ballets being, you know, toted on there. I've seen plenty of other things that relate to us. It's effectively ways for you to find investors.
Correct.
And why would you care? Well, here's a number of reasons. If you're starting a new company, you have a good idea, and you think you have a really good way of presenting that idea to people so that they can understand it. There's a number of things that go on that we've seen in Kickstart where things work and don't work along those lines, which I'll get to in more detail as we go along. Mm-hmm. But if you can get out there and tote your product, you are going to be attempting to build your equity towards your customer base and finding investors that way. And it works a number of different ways. Some people are really successful and some people less ambitious and still successful. Going into what you can do with Kickstarter, because there's a number of things besides startups, expansions. If you were a pre-built company, you're a board game company, you've decided that, you know, this year we're going to go into role-playing games. We've hired all these people, but it would be really nice if we could come up with more investment money. Same type of thing. Great way to expand a new division for a company. Advertising. Another thing that works there is we've got a new product coming out and we just want people to be aware of it and give it another venue. Since we're now becoming more and more an electronic venue for information, another place for people to get involved and see the product, see interesting things about the product.
I was thinking about this the other day. Kickstarter is the new black, so to speak, and that it used to be back in the olden days of, say, 2010, what you would do when you're starting a new product, you'd have a developer's blog, right?
Right.
You'd have a developer's blog, and you would post on Board Game Geek, and you would talk about the development of the product, and that was how you got buy-in from your potential customers. And I would say that the new way to do that is you go out on Kickstarter and say, here, we're doing development. Here's parts of the game. Here's some ideas. Here's what it's going to look like. Maybe here's a trailer, you know, for some of the PC games I've seen advertised. And
exactly.
People are buying in. The beautiful thing about this is we say this is a way to find investors. The investors are you and me, right? These are yep. companies that are asking you to kick in $20 or $50 or $100. And usually there's a really great spiff.
Yeah, these are fan base. These are, and I will get to that. This is really a fan base type of investment. This is not, I need $1 million. You know, we're the five guys I can tap for, you know,
right,
$200,000
a piece.
This is
$50,000,
and how many fans do I have out there who will do a pre-order type of thing with me? And there's a number of questions about what that's doing in the industry, but we're just going to stay with, generally speaking, why you would want to do this. Well, maybe a future show we'll talk about the theology of
what's going on with Kickstarter and what that
just,
means.
Just for the record, I don't know that that this show would be a good format for any type of theology, but I digress. I notice here in your notes that it, you talk about advertising, right? Is that
yes.
Go ahead, run with that.
I've already seen a number of companies who I know who have why they put their product out on Kickstarter in the sense of looking for revenues and so on and so forth. This product is already in production. Money's been paid. All they're looking to do is find yet a larger venue to advertise with and get people excited. It puts it in front of people who otherwise, there's people who are just following Kickstarter who aren't necessarily going over to their blog sites, their websites, et cetera, et cetera. And it is a larger market because there are different people than may otherwise discover you. In the sense of if you've come up with a new, let's put an example out there, a role-playing game, and there's a whole group of video game people who are watching all the time, and they catch your information and they start following you. They may never have located you otherwise.
Right. So basically we're talking about projects that are already in the works that may already be funded, but they're using Kickstarter to augment that.
You got it. That's as another form of use of Kickstarter.
Interesting. So I mean, the way I used to look at it was this is the GMT's P500 system writ large, and it's really moved beyond that a lot. It's not just we're going to fund the next game. It's you're right. It's advertising. It's a whole. It's not. I would officially say this is now officially a subculture of the gaming industry.
It really has become a subculture. It's almost like an Amazon type of thing. It's hitting such a large, broad market, and I mean really broad market out there.
Right.
That if you can hit the right bells and whistles to get yourself moved up into the list, you have people who are coming there for one thing and are looking at five areas that they never even thought about before. Mm-hmm. People that may not have even been gamers may come and find your product because they suddenly discovered it via Kickstarter.
And that's something that honestly, I had not even thought about until we talked about this last week. The idea of, and we talked about this, if you remember a long time ago, the same effect with the iPad games.
Right.
Right. There's a certain market for, say, Settlers of Catan, the board game, but you put it on in the App Store, and all of a sudden there's a gazillion people who've never seen Settlers of Catan before, who are now exposed to the product. And I guess the same thing is happening on Kickstarter. So now let me ask you this. Are people sharing Kickstarter or what's the thing? I apologize. I have a friend who is working to finance his brew pub on Kickstarter. And that's like, I've gone and I've ordered my pint glasses from his site. But what's the thing? Where do we go?
Well, as you pointed out, Kickstarter itself is becoming a subculture, and there's all sorts of dialogues going out through the industry at all levels. There's retailers talking to each other about stuff on Kickstarter and complaining as usual because they don't really get as much of a taste of it, and they're worried about that. Mm-hmm. There are manufacturers who are sharing information, talking to each other and seeing what can be done and, you know, talking about what does and doesn't work. There are consumers who are just talking about Kickstarter, what's cool, what they saw on this. Like I say, it is a subculture. It is developing even as we speak. It is kind of becoming a strange new economic engine. It's almost like the beginnings of Amazon, where people were first kind of, oh, what is this? And I can buy books, I can buy other stuff, so on and so forth. And it's the groundbreaking point of this. So it's an interesting area right now in its development.
Now, let me ask you this. You have a what works, what does not work thing here in your show notes. And I'm going to assume that the what works is going to be fairly standard stuff, right? You give us $25, we'll give you the bookmark. If you give us $50, we're going to give you a preview copy of the game or something like that. For $100, we give you a copy of the game and a t-shirt. Or is that the standard, you know, methodology for what's working on Kickstarter? Or what's the...
Yes, no. One of the big things that seems to be very effective on this is it reminds me a lot of YouTube stuff. Mm-hmm. Viral videos. If you can get out there and somehow make people excited by your presentation, And that's a really unusual situation. Very rarely have we had advertising where you could do a presentation. And you can do a YouTube thing. And if you go on Kickstarter, you'll see them everywhere. Mm-hmm. And they're very successful at their viral. If you get out there and you make your community feel involved and want to get involved into it, you know, why is this cool? Why do you want to become, you know, like I say, we're talking a subculture concept here, and it doesn't cost you much to get in. Some of the low-end stuff is as little as like $5 and $10 to get into some of these things. They're mm-hmm. pledges, and they hardly get you a thing.
Right.
It's more like, wow, that was really cool. I really liked what you said, and here's a $5 donation. You know, a majority of what's going on is people making pledges of the cost of the game or product that they're after.
Mm-hmm.
And then those who are willing to go a little bit further to get some new spiff.
Yes. I'm all about the spiff.
The other thing that keeps working on this one is you don't stop. If you go in there and you basically say, you know, here's my thing, here's my spiffs, you're done. After about 2 weeks, you just go flat. No one's paying attention anymore. And most of these things are open for anywhere from about 4 to 12 weeks.
Right.
As far as raising funds. If you continue to go back in and add something new, a little bit more of a stretch for people, a little different spiff, you know, one more level of something, even if it's some level that people might not even try to get to, you know, a $5,000 buy-in so that, you know, you can go have lunch with the developers, you know, that type of thing, it still keeps it in front of people, and it keeps them coming back and looking again and again. And it takes those people that may have been on the edge or, you know, at the low end donations to make a bigger commitment or even, you know, make a commitment whatsoever. The other thing that certainly works is the fan base, and it's find your fan base, let them know it's there. You know, if you have a website, if you have a designer's blog, you let them know that you're running, you know, this on a Kickstarter. You go to your standard advertising venues that'll allow news items. And you announce that if you're a new company that you're doing, you know, you're doing this thing and here's our Kickstarter link. Or if it's a new expansion, as I said, for an area that you're going into, frankly, just maybe a crazy new version of, you know, a reprint of one of your old cool classic games. Again, you go to the fan base, but don't stop with your fan base. And that's going to go into what doesn't work in fan base part two of my comment.
This is the part I wanted to hear.
Just talk to your fan base. When you're out there spinning your tail, don't just sit there and sell it to the people who were going to buy it anyway. Explain to people who aren't interested in the first place, they've just discovered you, why they want to be part of your community. Why is this cool and they need to buy in on it? And so many people, and I mean even what I call pros, really miss out on this one. They're just leaving money on the table, as the phrase goes here, because they're really not trying to sell to somebody who thinks this would be cool and new. They're just selling it to the guy who liked it 20 years ago or always thought that the previous four things that they'd seen along this product line, they might as well go ahead and buy this one too because they've always liked them.
Okay, so basically, you have access to this huge new base of people or new market of people, so don't just sell to your core.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And realize that you are being viewed by people, again, who may never have looked at a game in their life before and are just now discovering you. It goes back to one of the old catchphrases of nothing draws a crowd like a crowd. When you hit the top end postings of the Kickstarter level, people who have no other interest are like, oh, what's that? And go and look, because this is becoming community. This is like the YouTube community. This is like the Facebook community. It's another encompassing community where people are viewing information. And we have a society that loves to dabble in trivial information all the time.
All right, so basically what I need to do is create a Kickstarter site to fund my Kickstarter presentation for the product I haven't come up with yet. And I should...
You know, if you can do it because it's a donation thing. And we talked about this, you know, some very successful companies who have
started with really small amounts that they've been looking for, mm-hmm. And the tens of thousands who have made in hundreds of thousands. And people are like, well, what do they do with the money? You know, with the extra money? Well, they pocket it. That's what they do with the money. these are donations. You should be aware of the fact that, and I haven't heard hard numbers yet, but most of the people I've spoken to about this tend to be pitching numbers between 12 and 20% failure, which is you have donation requirement. You know, these are commitments towards donations, but there's nothing requiring them to follow through. And you lose about 12 to 20% of them just straight drop out. They're never really going to spend the money. They don't have the money. They had it, you know, 2 weeks ago when right. they said they were going to do it. Now that the product is going to be there and they need to pay for it, they don't have the money anymore. And they just drop out. So you, if you're looking for money, keep in mind that you probably want to generate more than you actually need, since you're not going to see all of it anyhow.
Okay. So in other words, what you're saying is that these are the basic, they're not debiting my credit card at the time of the donation.
No, this doesn't affect you until the products are available.
Okay. So it really is like P500 writ large in that way, except that apparently there's a backout clause.
There's a backout clause.
Okay. So whereas the P500, they just charge me, and that's how I find out it's shipping. did I mention I got Kingdom of Heaven the other day from MMP? Did we mention this on the last show? I ordered this from their P500 site, Multiman Publishing, in 2008, I think, was when it originally appeared. It's now mid-2012, and it finally shipped.
Well, the advantage of that is you're still alive to eventually build.
That's a hell of a hang time. But anyways, I digress. Now Kickstarter, again, we're not going to see this going to hit. I'm kind of digressing because Kingdom of Heaven is sitting on my desk unopened. I haven't had a chance to read it. But we've talked about Kickstarter before, and we've said, look, this is a new venue. This is a way you don't have to find the angel investor. This is a way for you to up the professionalism of your product because now you have more money to spend, right?
Right.
And you can produce a product the product that you want to. And
exactly.
It's a huge opportunity.
And you can take away, you know, one of the basis of, you know, capitalist society is finding other people to share your risk.
Oh, correct. The whole idea of the corporation. And so anyways, it's not, here's the thing is that when we first started talking about this, God, was it, it was probably was it this January or last January? I think one of our predictions for the year.
Probably we first started talking about it last January with about as much knowledge of it as you and I have of, you know, the new multidimensional concepts since the God particle was theoretically discovered.
That's right. Exactly. And my string theory knowledge not being what it is. But anyways, this is something that it's been a while and I keep waiting for. What was it? What was the game that was the big craze earlier this spring? Was it Picture This or Draw Something?
I think it was
whatever the little iPod iPhone game. It was right. Basically like charades or.
I think it's Draw This.
Draw This. It was huge, and Zynga went out and spent a fortune to buy the guys, buy the company that developed it. And you know what? They're shedding losers, losers. They're shedding users at an immense pace already. It's a fad that came and went. And with Kickstarter, I kept holding my breath, wondering if this is something that people were going to get tired of, and they haven't. It's been steady growth over and over and over since then, to the point where it's not just a phenom anymore. This is an established practice, yep. and quite frankly, I'm embarrassed that I'm as far behind the curve on it as I am.
I'm personally amazed at the demographic. I thought that this was going to be very appealing to a very youthful crowd, very more electronic oriented crowd than. Right. The mid-range or older age gamer. No, it's totally across the spectrum.
Interesting. At some point, we're going to have to see if Kickstarter divulges numbers on their user base and their active users. My guess is that they'd rather die than release that information, but without, you know, making us pay for it. But interesting stuff. And again, we've talked about Kickstarter before, and Rhett, I think it's interesting about the what doesn't work, right? Talk to your audience, but don't talk just to your audience. If we can reduce that to one pithy saying, I think that's it right there.
Yeah.
And for God's sakes, be professional.
Yeah. You know, it's really interesting because we've seen some people where their original launches are obviously really fine-tuned. Mm-hmm. Great-looking production-level stuff that they're showing you. Lots of information about their products and how it's going to work. Mm-hmm. If they had video, very high-end video type of stuff, artwork that's very polished. And then as their success grows, they're really almost overwhelmed by their own success. You know, some of the things are looking very obviously like this was drawn on a napkin yesterday because it's our next concept of what we're going to put in for mm-hmm. our next spiff for you to buy into this one next level after this, because they become so successful that they don't have time to keep up with it.
Which is never a bad place to be in. But you're right. I think what you're the takeaway for the small game company here is, plan your campaign on Kickstarter, right? Don't Absolutely. Just plan week one, plan weeks 5, 6, and 8. And, you know, don't just, you know, assume that, you know, I'm going to fire, you know, I'm going to put it up there and then I'm done with it. There is more to do and you do want to keep up the level of polish, right? And that's, I was joking earlier about the Kickstarter presentation. And that's something that I'm not even a Kickstarter person. And I've heard that the presentations have gotten more and more polished. And those are the ones that are going viral and getting the hits.
Absolutely.
And now, do you necessarily need to go out and spend $50,000 on video production to produce your board game so that you can then raise $50,000 to print a board game? No.
You really don't. I mean, you know, it is a question of, you know, how do you present yourself? And like I say, I like YouTube as a really good example of it because YouTube has so many different levels of quality. But the answer is you need to, you know, just don't go out and do your video in one shot and, you know, the single take and just run it. You know, find somebody that can help you edit it if you can't edit it on your own. And editors are really critical. We won't even go down the path of my explanation along what I think of why editors are useful. But the situation is you're always too close to the product. Find somebody who can look at it and say, you know, that looked really cool and that sounded really weird. Mm-hmm. Maybe you want to change the way you phrase that because I didn't understand it. You know, look to when you present your product, present your best face.
Yes, this is good advice on everything. But like I said, it's huge when you're talking to people who aren't familiar, who've never been to Board Game Geek or RPG Now or any of the other sites, you know, or aren't familiar with the industry. You can't slang term it, right? You've got to polish it to the point where everybody knows what you're talking about. If that's the market you're going to go after, so
yeah, if you're looking for a broader market, if it's, you know, if you're looking for a niche market, speak their lingo.
Yes.
Walk the walk because, you know, it's okay. You know, but you still want to, like I say, you still want to be polished. You probably still want to go in there and make sure that the message is the message you really want to convey.
Yeah. You know, like it's like you said, I think the magic of Kickstarter is that you can get pre-funding from a wider variety of sources than you might normally be able to. You can put up a developer's blog and have people pre-order your product all day long and you're going to net $1,000. You can do this on Kickstarter and you might get, you know, you might get 10,000, you might get 50,000, or more because it's such a broader audience. But again, take the broader audience into account. I'm going to quit banging on that drum.
Yeah, I think we're pretty much covered there.
Okay, good. Excellent. All right. Well, let's, folks, that's our take on Kickstarter right now. If any of you have experience with it or you have any more questions about it or comments about it, by all means, send us some information. And we're going to give you the way to contact us here in just a minute. Right now, I've got some listener mail, and these are, posts from the Purple Pawn from where we are lovingly hosted. This one is from Dave. His comment was this was, by the way, on our show about All About Boxes. Fantastic. This is the kind of stuff you guys seem to do so well. I love it. Thanks. We seemed to do it well. I hope we did actually do it well. Thank you, Dave.
No, we just seemed to.
Yes, this is the kind of arcane crap that nobody else talks about that we'll assume that you know what you're talking about because no one else does. Yeah, so thanks, Dave. We appreciate that. And this is from John. He says, this is the episode I've been waiting for. Yeah, I guess I'm that guy. Thanks. So, John, I appreciate it. I'm glad you enjoyed the show because really this, you know, we had to do All About Boxes and we're going to have to make this a reference show. like every other show, like in the future when they say, hey, why don't you guys talk about boxes? We're just going to point them back to episode 64. And finally, we have a comment from Alex Swingle. Alex has written in before, and his comment was, to say this was informative is an understatement. I'm finally getting around to doing price quotes for one of my games, and to have actual answers on what things cost is fantastic. It not only changed what materials I plan on using. For example, I'm going with a tuck box and in 12-point instead of a setup box now for a card game. It gave me some understanding on the cost so I can know the average price per unit. It helps a lot considering all I have are quotes from multiple printers, and it can be difficult to know who is overcharging and who skipping corners to give me such a price. The shrink wrap tip was the most useful thing I heard on the topic. So again, Alex, again, thank you very much. Thanks for everybody who commented on that show. As you know, I used to do print board games and card games for a living, so it's something that I know about. So if anybody has any stupid technical questions on boxes, by golly, I'm the guy. Whereas Rhett,
yes. I call technical questions on boxes.
Well, Rhett, you've always been in marketing and sales. You are a master of
the least important thing. That's the critical aspect.
Well,
because it's how you get your product alive to the into the store.
No, that's correct. But you're the master of the fuzzy, the fuzziness that is the beauty of marketing. You have to think concretely about fuzzy things, whereas production is very much all about sharp corners and stuff. So, again, everybody, thanks for writing in on that. And Rhett, how can other people comment on our amazing information about Kickstarter and about boxes?
Well, you can email us at papermoney@purplepawn.com. You can Skype us, Paper Money Podcast, or
you can post to the to our shows on the we are the podcast category on the Purple Pawn website. You can check out our RSS feed on the Purple Pawn at purplepawn.com/category/papermoney/feed. And that will be.
I think we need another slash in there. Come on, there has to be some other way to subcategorize that.
I apologize. There's just not much I can do about the slashes. At least I'm not telling people they're forward slashes anymore. I figure we're 20.
I have noticed you completely left that out. I didn't want to comment because of the fact that I thought you've done such a nice job. I wouldn't bring it up.
No, I've said this before.
Upcoming stuff. We have one big upcoming event. It's summer. It's July. It will be August by the time we get ready to do another show for you. And we will be talking Gen Con.
Yes, we're not talking about the release of The Amazing Spider-Man. We are, in fact, talking about Gen Con.
Isn't that out in theaters now?
It did just come out. I'm refusing to go see it on the grounds that James Bond made it 17 movies before a reboot. I can't believe that Spider-Man could only make it 3.
I won't even go down the path to make my explanation as to why.
Let's probably not go there. Yeah,
James Bond also managed to, hire 4,000 actors, and everybody gets to say, well, which one of these actors did you think was the best?
Yeah. George Lazenby, by far. But
and we won't go any further.
But again, we're going to talk about Gen Con. We're going to talk about the news coming up on Gen Con. And we're going to talk a little bit, I want to talk a little bit about attending the show as a fan. Right, because we've talked so much about how to mount
the
expedition.
You'll have to explain what that's like, because I haven't done that in so long.
Well, this year I'm completely off the hook. Last year I was doing a little bit of stuff for various people. I think for you included. But this year I am going. I've left the plane, so I've got my parachute on my back. I'm coming in as a fan only.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'm baffled. I have, so everybody out there understands. I have been attending Gen Con since 1977. I haven't attended Gen Con as a fan since 1983. So I have now dated myself.
Wow. Just so you know, Rhett, I'm going to have to find a younger guy to do this show with.
Well, yeah, because I'm going to kick off, and that's going to make it easy.
I'm just saying, somebody
who can do it, because I can't.
So, folks, if you're not a fan of Matlock, write in and send me your CV. Rhett was destroyed when Andy Griffith passed away last week. And I understand Ernest Borgnine died today as well, by the way.
He did die. I just saw that post on that. Well, he's also 95, so I didn't feel so bad about it either.
I tell you what.
Yeah, he died. when he was 95 years old.
That's right. So here's okay. If you don't remember watching Airwolf as a first run TV show, send me a resume and we'll boot Red right off the show. All right, folks. That's it for this show. Our next show will be coming up at the end of the month. And I'm Ben Clark.
And I'm Red Kim.
We'll talk to you later.